I'm not much of a hunter, and I've never done any trapping in my life, but I was talking with Brent here a couple weeks ago about trapping, because he apparently has done his fair share of that growing up with his grandfather back in Iowa. And he told me some things that I thought were quite interesting. Number one, he told me that if you don't camouflage or hide your trap or your snare, you will never catch anything. That if left uncovered, even if you put it in the middle of the path where the animals are normally traveling back and forth, if it's obvious and apparent, it will be easily avoided even by the dumbest of animals. Another thing he told me that I thought was interesting was how different animals respond differently when they are ensnared in a trap. You know, some panic and try to push their way through, only to have the noose tighten around their neck and kill themselves more quickly. Others take a different approach. He told me about some coons that he found stuck in a snare that were not dead, but were just lying there. You see, the coon was smart enough to recognize the fact that it couldn't back out of the trap, but it also knew that if it continued to push forward, it would only kill itself. And so, with no other alternatives, it just lay down, gave up, and waited for the trapper to come and put it out of its misery. So that's interesting that an animal, once it's ensnared in a trap, is helpless to release itself without doing damage to itself anyway, and only the trapper or perhaps an animal-loving passerby could come by and release that animal from the snare. Well, why do I mention this idea about trapping? Well, recently I was speaking in Bloomington Normal's summer series, which this year is on the theme of finding out what pleases the Lord, and I was assigned the topic, Escaping the Woman Who is a Snare. What I'd like to do over the next 2 weeks is share with you the results of my study on this topic. I won't do it all in one lesson, but we'll split it up into two. This week, I want to see if we can't identify who is the woman that is a snare that we are supposed to escape from. Well, my initial thought when I saw the title of my lesson were all of those warnings from Solomon to his son in the beginning of the book of Proverbs. For example, Proverbs chapter 2, after he has encouraged his son to listen to wisdom, he says in verse 16 that wisdom will deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words, that leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God, for her house sinks down to death and her tracks lead to the dead, and none who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. In the fifth chapter of Proverbs, in verse 3, he says, "The lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it. Now then, my son, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth, but keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, or you will give your vigor to others, and your years to the cruel one, and strangers will be filled with your strength, and your hard-earned goods will go to the house of an alien." And in the sixth chapter of Proverbs, verse 24, he says, "To keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress, do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her capture you with her eyelids. For on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread, and an adulteress hunts for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is the one who goes to his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her will not go unpunished." And then, of course, in Proverbs chapter 7, beginning in verse 21, he says, "With her many persuasions, she entices him. With her flattering lips, she seduces him. Suddenly, he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, so he does not know that it will cost him his life." And thinking about this woman who is a snare, trying to trap men by her seduction, and the need to escape from this type of a woman, my mind immediately goes and thinks about Joseph in the book of Genesis, chapter 39, when he is fleeing from the house and from Potiphar's wife who was trying to seduce him. And of course, this idea of literally running away from the promiscuous woman, the seductress, is certainly a principle that's grounded even in New Testament teaching. Paul himself says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18 that we are to flee from sexual immorality. We are to run away from it. So I was surprised to see that my text didn't come from the book of Proverbs at all, but from another book written by Solomon, from the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 26, to be precise. And maybe that's fitting because, remember, snares that are obvious are easily avoided. So the fact that I was surprised by who this woman who is a snare is, maybe was a valuable lesson to learn. So let's look carefully at this text here in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 26, and let's see if we can't identify who this woman is that those who are pleasing to God will escape from. Solomon writes in verse 26 of Ecclesiastes 7, "And I discovered more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her." In our efforts to identify this woman, I'd like to begin by noting a contrast between this woman here in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and the adulteress or the harlot that we had just looked at in those passages in Proverbs, particularly a contrast in what these women use to trap their prey. You remember there in Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 3, the warning was that the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. In chapter 6, verses 24 and 25, Solomon said, "To keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress, do not desire her beauty in your heart, nor let her capture you with her eyelids." In Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 5, he said, "That they may keep you from an adulteress, from the foreigner who flatters with her words." And later on in verse 21, he says, "With her many persuasions she entices him, with her flattering lips she seduces him." So here, this adulteress, the harlot in Proverbs, the method that she uses, the thing that she uses to ensnare her prey is her lips, her words, her persuasions, and even her physical beauty. But contrast that with what Solomon said there in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 26. Because there, the woman doesn't use her words or her mouth or her beauty to ensnare her prey, but rather it is her heart that is described as the snares and nets. Well, what exactly does that mean? And is there any difference in the two? Well, I think so. Remember, Ecclesiastes, like the book of Proverbs, was written by Solomon. And so knowing what we know of Solomon, that is knowing about his life, his reign, and particularly his latter marital status, it may shed some light on who exactly he has in mind here in our text in Ecclesiastes when he warns about this woman whose heart is snares and nets. So let's take just a minute here and do a brief review of the life of Solomon. By all appearances, Solomon was a good man who faithfully served God. You'll remember in 1 Kings chapter 3 that when he's praying to God and worshiping God in verse 5, God said to him, "Ask what you wish me to give to you." And of course, Solomon could have asked for any number of things. He could have asked for wealth. He could have asked for a long life. He could have asked for victory over his enemies. But instead, he asked for wisdom. We read in verse 9, "So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil." Solomon could have asked for anything, but he says, "God, help me to know how to tell the difference between good and evil, to know right from wrong, so that I may judge your people well." Of course, God is very impressed with this request, and so he ends up granting him not only this wisdom, but also the long life and the wealth and the prosperity and the peace that Solomon would enjoy throughout the majority of his reign. Now, I would suggest to you that probably the reason why Solomon asked for wisdom to know between right and wrong, good and evil, and to rule well is because it had been impressed upon him by his father David the importance of not only knowing God's law, but keeping God's law, of doing what God wanted him to do. Notice in 1 Kings chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, we read, "As David's time to die drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, 'I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and his testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn, so that the Lord may carry out his promise which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons are careful of their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel.'" And this lesson was not lost on Solomon. He understood well the importance of remaining true and loyal to God and serving him with a whole heart. And I believe that Solomon, when he started his reign, that was his intention. That was his goal, was to serve God with all of his heart. You'll remember in the 8th chapter of 1 Kings, at the dedication of the temple that Solomon has built, Solomon prays to God, and we read in verse 23, he said, "O Lord, the God of Israel, there is no God like you in heaven above or on earth beneath, keeping covenant and showing loving kindness to your servants who walk before you with all their heart, who have kept with your servant, my father David, that which you promised him. Indeed, you have spoken with your mouth and fulfilled it with your hand as it is this day. Now, therefore, O Lord, the God of Israel, keep with your servant David, my father, that which you promised him, saying, you shall not lack a man to sit on the throne of Israel, if only your sons take heed to their way to walk before me as you have walked. Now, therefore, O God of Israel, let your word, I pray, be confirmed, which you have spoken to your servant, my father David." Solomon prays to God here and he says, "God, I know what you promised my father David, that if his sons would walk before you with all of their heart, as my father David walked before you with all of his heart, that you would make sure that they would sit on the throne in Israel." And he's saying, "I'm trying to do that, Lord. So make good on your promise to my father David." But what's more, Solomon not only recognized the importance of himself walking before God with a whole heart, but the fact that the people of Israel needed to be wholly devoted to the Lord their God. Notice in verse 61 of chapter 8, he's speaking now, he's finished praying to God, and he turns and he speaks and addresses the people there who are gathered around the temple. And he says, "Let your heart, therefore, be wholly devoted to the Lord our God, to walk in his statutes and to keep his commandments as at this day." So understand, Solomon is the kind of guy that's trying to serve God. He understands the importance of serving God with a whole heart. He's trying to do that, and he's trying to impress upon the people that he's leading that they need to serve God with a whole heart. And then after this occasion, God speaks to Solomon a second time. Remember, the first time he spoke to him was there in the 3rd chapter where he says, "Ask what you will of me," and Solomon asked for wisdom. Well, here in chapter 9 in verse 3, the Lord said to him, "I have heard your prayer and your supplication which you have made before me. I have consecrated this house which you have built by putting my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. As for you, if you will walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I commanded you, and will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel, just as I promised to your father David. You shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel." And so God says to Solomon in response to his prayer is, "You keep doing your part, walk before me with a whole heart, and you can rest assured I will keep my part of the bargain, that you will have a man to sit on the throne in Israel perpetually." And what we see is that then God goes on and issues a warning here to Solomon that if he should fail to walk before him with a whole heart, indeed God will punish him. He goes on in verse 6 and says, "But if you or your sons indeed turn away from following me and do not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them and the house which I have consecrated for my name. I will cast out of my sight So Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all the peoples, and this house will become a heap of ruins. Everyone who passes by will be astonished and hiss and say, why has the Lord done thus to this land and to this house? And they will say, well, it's because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt and adopted other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, the Lord has brought all this adversity on them. So as long as Solomon continued to serve God faithfully with a whole heart and seek him wholeheartedly, Solomon indeed enjoyed peace and prosperity during his reign as king. As it was promised to his father David, recorded in 1 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 9, where God said to David, behold, a son will be born to you who shall be a man of rest, and I will give him rest from all his enemies on every side, for his name shall be Solomon, and I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days. That was the promise that God made about Solomon, and indeed that was what happened. We read in 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 24, speaking of Solomon, for he had dominion over everything west of the river from Tifsa even to Gaza, over all the kings west of the river, and he had peace on all sides around about him. And in chapter 5 and verse 4, Solomon himself, commenting on his enjoyment of peace at the hand of God to Hiram, the king of Tyre, says, but now the Lord my God has given me rest on every side. There is neither adversary nor misfortune. But then something happened in Solomon's old age that changed the course of his life. We read in 1 Kings chapter 11, beginning in verse 1, now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, you shall not associate with them. Nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your hearts away after their gods. But Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not follow the Lord fully as David his father had done. And then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. Thus also he did for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. It was Solomon's many foreign idolatrous wives who turned his heart away from serving God completely. And as a result, God would turn away from Solomon. In verse 9, it says, now the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods. But he did not observe what the Lord had commanded. And as a result, God punishes Solomon's disloyalty by taking the kingdom away from Solomon. He says in verse 11, because you have done this and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I commanded you, I'll surely tear the kingdom away from you and will give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I'll not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. Whew. Solomon might be thinking, well, at least those bad things aren't going to happen during my lifetime. Yes, it's bad that the kingdom will be taken away from me, but it'll be taken away from not really from me, but from my son. But there were bad things that came in the lifetime of Solomon. We read in verse 14 that then the Lord raised up an adversary to Solomon, Hadad the Edomite. He was of the royal line in Edom. And so Solomon's gone all this time in his reign as king with peace and prosperity and no adversaries, and now he turns his back on God by serving these idols, and God raises up an adversary to him. But not just one adversary. In verse 23, we read, God also raised up another adversary to him, Rezin, the son of Eliada, who had fled from his lord Hadadezer, king of Zobah. And he gathered men to himself and became leader of a marauding band after David slew them of Zobah. And they went to Damascus and stayed there, and he reigned in Damascus. And so he was an adversary to Israel all the days of Solomon, along with the evil that Hadad did. And he abhorred Israel and reigned over Aram. But not only that, not only did God raise up adversaries from outside of the kingdom, God raises up one of Solomon's own servants as an adversary to him. We read in verse 26, then Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zeruiah, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow, also rebelled against the king. What was Solomon's big error? Where did he go wrong? Well, I would suggest to you, it was with his love and devotion for his many foreign idolatrous wives that led him away from God. We read there in chapter 11 in verse 2 that he held fast to these in love. Even though God had said, have nothing to do with those people, Solomon held fast to these in love. And I think the point that the narrator is trying to get across here, if I could put it in the way that we would talk today, is that Solomon loved these women so that he wanted to please them. He wanted to show them that he loved them. He wanted to prove to them that he loved them. Which, by the way, husbands, is not altogether a bad thing for us to do for our wives. We need to show them that we love them. We need to prove that we are devoted to them. But sometimes we have to acknowledge that in our desire to please our wives, to prove our love and devotion to them, we sometimes do stupid things. We sometimes even do things that we know are dangerous or reckless or even potentially harmful to ourselves. Maybe we even do things that we know are not right. I think the man Samson illustrates this point clearly. The way he interacted with first his Philistine wife and then later the woman Delilah. Go back with me to Judges chapter 14. In Judges 14, Samson is smitten by this Philistine woman, and he just falls in love with her, and he demands to his father to go and make preparation for him to marry her. And so his father does that. And at their wedding feast, remember, he propounds a riddle to the Philistine guests who are at the wedding. In verse 14, he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. And the bargain was that if they could tell him the riddle by the end of the wedding feast, then he would give them 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes. But if they couldn't, then they were supposed to pay that to him. Well, they weren't getting anywhere with their riddle. And so they put some pressure on Samson's new bride. In verse 15, it says, it came about on the fourth day that they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband so that he'll tell us the riddle, or we'll burn you in your father's house with fire. And so Samson's wife, verse 16, wept before him and said, you only hate me and you do not love me. You've propounded a riddle to the sons of my people and you have not told it to me. And she says, oh, hon, I can't believe you're keeping secrets from me. I don't know why you wouldn't trust me to tell me what the answer to your riddle is. It's not fair. You must not really love me. I like Samson's response. He said, behold, I have not told my father or my mother, so should I tell you? Obviously not very endearing to his wife here on this occasion. However, verse 17, she wept before him 7 days while their feast lasted. And on the seventh day, he told her because she pressed him so hard. She kept after him, Samson, you don't really love me. You must hate me because you're keeping this secret from me. So finally, he gives in, probably to prove to her that she's not right, that he does love her. So he tells her the answer to the riddle. Of course, she promptly goes and tells the Philistines, and they solve the riddle. And that results in Samson getting angry, getting into a big fight, going and killing out some Philistine people, and then ultimately losing his wife to his companion here on this occasion. And you would think that Samson would have learned his lesson here about women, but after getting involved with a harlot in the 16th chapter, he meets a woman by the name of Delilah. And the Philistines again try to use Delilah to uncover Samson's weakness, the source of his strength. And so she's, you know, asking him, well, Samson, tell me, what makes you so strong? What can I do to make you weak like any other man? And Samson, of course, lies to her initially, saying, well, you know, you've got to bind me with, seven new ropes, I think it was, that have never been dried, and I'll become weak like any other man. And so he falls asleep, and she binds him up with those seven fresh ropes that have never been dried and calls out, Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And Samson wakes up and breaks the bonds that are on him. And obviously his strength has not left him. And so Delilah says, oh, you've lied to me. Tell me for real what it is that will make you weak. And Samson then tells her, well, you know, if you'll bind me with a new rope or with new ropes that have never been used on anything else, then I'll become weak like any other man. So he falls asleep. She gets some new rope, ties him up, and cries out, the Philistines are upon you. And Samson gets up, breaks the bonds, and promptly whoops up on those Philistines. And it's obvious that he has lied to Delilah yet again. So she says, oh, now you've lied to me again. You must not really love me. You know, tell me what will make you weak. And so he comes up with this thing about weaving his hair into a loom and putting the pin into it and all this stuff, and that'll make him weak. And so she tries that, and of course, same result. And it's interesting then in verse 15 we read, she said to him, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You've deceived me these three times and not told me where your great strength is. You must not really love me. How could you even say that you love me if you won't tell me the truth? You won't let me in on this secret. And it came about when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him that his soul was annoyed to death. And so he told her all that was in his heart and said to her, a razor has never come on my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaved, then my strength will leave me and I'll become weak and be like any other man. And I have to think that as Samson fell asleep that night, he had to have known that he was going to wake up without any hair. You see, Samson gives in to the pressure of Delilah here. Not because it's the best thing to do. Not because it's the smart thing to do. In fact, it's going to be dangerous and detrimental to Samson himself. But she keeps playing that, well, you must not really love me. She's tugging at his heartstrings. Prove that you love me. Tell me the secret. So even though he knows it's not the best thing to do, he tells her anyway. I keep that in mind because it's interesting to me that as we look at the book of Proverbs, we've already pointed out where early on in the book of Proverbs, Solomon in chapters 2, 5, 6, and 7, he goes to great lengths and has plenty to say to his son about needing to avoid the adulterous woman. But as we get to the latter Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 10 through 29, which are also attributed to Solomon, it seems that another perspective on women is presented here, particularly a perspective on wives. Notice with me a few of these Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 14. Solomon says, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 22, he says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 4, an excellent wife is a crown of her husband. Here he seems to have this glowing review of a wise woman, a prudent woman, a woman who makes a great wife, and she's a reward, she's a crown. But, the end of verse 4 here, she who shames him is like rottenness to his bone. If you get a good woman, that's great, that's a blessing from God. But if you get a not so great woman, well, it's like rottenness in your bones. In Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 22, he says, as a ring of gold in a swine's nose, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. In Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 13, a foolish son is destruction to his father, and the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping. In Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 9, he says, it is better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Later on in verse 19, he says, it's better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. And in Proverbs chapter 27, verses 15 and 16, he notes, a constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. He who restrains her restrains the wind and grasps oil with his right hand. Now, this portrayal of women or wives here may appear far less hostile and less dangerous than the brazen seduction of a harlot. But remember that effective snares are not supposed to be obvious, and that when effectively camouflaged, they can be just as, if not more, dangerous than obvious snares. And it seems to me that this is what Solomon experienced with his many, many wives. I can imagine them putting pressure on Solomon to prove his love to them, much like Delilah or Samson's Philistine wife before her did with Samson. They're saying to him, Solomon, babe, if you really love me, you would let me worship my gods. Solomon, hon, if you really love me, if you really cared about me, if you really wanted what was best for me, you would provide me a place to go and sacrifice to my gods. Solomon, babe, if you really cared about me, you would build me an altar to my God. Hon, if you really love me, I would know that you love me if you would come with me to worship my gods. And so I would suggest to you that even though Solomon knew that it was not the best thing to do, that it was not even the right thing to do, because he wanted to prove his love to his wives, he indeed did build altars to their gods, as we read about in 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 8. And not only that, he seems to have gone a step further and went off and actually worshiped their gods with them. And as a result, his heart was turned away from serving God. His love for his wives drew his heart away from the Lord. And apparently for Solomon, this happening, his heart being drawn away from God by his love for his foreign wives, along with the consequences that we talked about that came as a result of that, was more bitter than death itself. Or as he says in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 26, and I discovered more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. So I would suggest that here in Ecclesiastes 7, the woman whose heart is snares and nets is really anyone who draws your heart away from a complete and total devotion to God. Because now your heart is competing with their devotion. You have a competing devotion to them, a competing love for them, a competing desire to please them. It's not just about pleasing God anymore. You also want to please this other person. And thus, because of this competition for your devotion and your love and your heart, it causes you to compromise on doing what is right, and it prevents you from serving God with your whole heart. Now, if indeed this is the case, then it's not only a woman whose heart could be a snare, but indeed it could be a man whose heart is a snare, because he is drawing a godly woman away from her total devotion to the Lord. And for what it's worth, I'll just share with you that it's been my observation in the Lord's church that men are far more likely to be the one who is a snare to their wives who are trying to serve the Lord rather than the other way around. And so, men, if you were thinking that this lesson is all about women and we've got to watch out for women because their heart's a snare and all this kind of stuff, recognize that it's not just women who can be the problem. You may be the problem. You may be the snare. And Solomon is clear here in this text that the one who pleases God will escape the snare. They will not allow their heart to be drawn away from a full devotion to the Lord. And so indeed, we cannot be drawn away from God by any other allegiance in our lives. And if we are, well, this will not be pleasing to God. And indeed, we read there in 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 9 that when Solomon allowed that to happen in his life, the text says, now the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from the Lord. So if we want to please the Lord, We need to escape from the ones who would ensnare our hearts with theirs and thus keep us from fully serving the Lord. Which leads to the question, how do we do that? Well, that will be the subject of our discussion next week. Thank you for your attention.